and moving rather rapidly. Our Father, thank you so much for our time together in Proverbs, and please speak to us and feed us, and let what we do and say today draw upon your life and your presence with us. In the name of Jesus. A good name is to be chosen rather than great riches, loving favor rather than silver and gold. In other words, a good reputation, a good name in the community is worth its weight in gold. We all like people who are reliable, trustworthy, dependable, consistent, and that's what he's talking about here, a good name. And more valuable than gold and silver. And so it doesn't matter whether the person is rich or poor, or what their standing is in life, if they have integrity, we respect them. And oftentimes we respect a poor man more than we do a man who's got money. The rich and the poor have this in common. The Lord is the maker of them all. God's responsible for everybody. And so some of his choice people are poor and some are not. And God has created both of them. A prudent man foresees evil and hides himself, but the simple pass on and are punished. Now that's again about being cautious and making choices and not rational, not irrational and impulsive. And that's what a prudent man sees danger and avoids it. The simple fool gets himself into trouble all the time. By the way, please interrupt at any time because I go so fast. By humility and the fear of the Lord are riches and honor and life. That's not just true in this present life, it's true on into eternity. The humble person who trusts Jesus and is sensitive to him will enjoy long-term prosperity in heaven of one kind or another. Thorns and snares are in the way of the perverse. He who guards his soul will be far from them. Train up a child in the way that he should go, and when he's old, he will not depart from it. That Proverbs is frequently quoted and frequently misunderstood. The idea here would be that parents should figure out what their kids are like and train each child according to his personality and his temperament, one at a time, not to put him through a factory line of assembly and treat all of them alike. That's that. Very good verse. The rich rules over the poor, and the borrower is the servant to the lender. In society, a man of power and influence and wealth tends to own a lot of property, control a lot of businesses, has his hand in all the affairs of the community. The borrower is the servant to the lender. If you go and take out a mortgage on your house, you're obligated to the lender to pay that back, and it's going to tie you down for a long time.
Lambert, the verse here, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it.
Right.
I've always understood it to mean that if you train up a child in the ways of the Lord, on the teachings of the Bible, then throughout that person's life, as they get older, they will utilize that knowledge, make the right decisions, and then they will live a very productive life.
That's very good. That's a very good insight. I think here the idea would be that you should pay attention to your child and see what his gifts are, his talents, his personality type, and pour truth about God into that kid as a unique individual. If you do that, that child may wander, go astray from the Lord part of the way, but in his old age, he's going to come back and be stable. So, in other words, you do the best you can with your kids and turn them loose on the world, and they may get into trouble, but if you have raised them with a good, solid foundation, they'll rebound and come back. I think that's the idea here. But you're absolutely right. Now, where was I? Verse?
Well, it just seems like when they're trained in the proper understanding of life and yeah, what is right and what is proper, they will always recognize that the bad path is truly a bad path, and you don't want to go that way. They will not depart from it.
That's
when
right,
they get older. They
yeah,
will recognize what is truly good and the benefits of staying on the true path.
Absolutely right. On the other hand, I have seen very strict families where the parents are dictatorial and punish the kids at the slightest disobedience, and they only pay attention to the externals, not to the uniqueness of that child. And that only makes kids hurt and angry and bitter and resentful, and they want to go exactly the opposite way of what they were taught, because they weren't taught according to their own personalities, and they weren't taught the ways of the Lord. They were just taught ruthlessly. He who sows iniquity will reap sorrow. The rod of his anger will fail. Well, that's pretty obvious, that he who sows to the flesh will from the flesh reap corruption. And a person who gets angry all the time and reacts is not going to get anywhere in the long run. He who has a bountiful eye will be blessed. He who gives of his bread to the poor. This would be a person who's generous and thoughtful and sensitive, sensitive to the needs around him and sensitive to the people who have less. Cast out the scoffer and contention will leave. Yes, strife and reproach will cease. In a group situation, you get one person who's skeptical and argumentative and disagrees, generally disrupts the fellowship of the group. And when that person leaves, peace and calm will settle down over the rest of the group. Some people in a group don't realize that they're causing trouble and dissension because they want to be in the limelight and they want to be on stage. He who loves purity of heart and has grace on his lips, the king will be his friend. In other words, if you're a good, honest man in your community and you're known for that, somebody higher up's going to notice it all the way up to the king. And you're going to get, even in a dictatorships, a dictator rewards law and order and service to the country because you're a law-abiding citizen and because you don't cause trouble. And so the king's going to award you a good citizen badge. It still happens today. The eyes of the Lord preserve knowledge, but he overthrows the words of the faithless. The eyes of the Lord go to and fro. So throughout the earth to seek those who are paying attention to him. So you don't get away with nothing in this life because God sees everything we do and keeps note of it. And the goodness of your heart will be rewarded in due time. Also, if you have evil hatred in your heart, that's going to show up in due time also. The slothful man says, there's a lion outside, I will be slain in the streets. This is the lazy guy, the guy who sits around all day and watches TV or stays stoned. And that person's going to eventually be afraid to go out of his nest, afraid of getting a job, afraid of failure. So it's all built into his original attitude of being lazy and slothful. The mouth of an immoral woman is a deep pit. He who is abhorred of the Lord will fall there. That means that many women in the world are bad news for us guys. They may be friendly, they may be attractive, but if you go hang out with them, you're going to find that you're going to stumble and fall. We saw that early in the early chapters of Proverbs. And there are very, very good women in the world who are godly and edifying and helpful. And then there are women who outwardly may be very beautiful, but are Jezebels or Athaliahs or witches, prostitutes in their heart, seductive, destructive. Faithfulness is bound up in the heart of a child. Foolishness is bound up in the heart of the child, but the rod of correction will drive it far from him. That's kind of humorous because little kids can be very stubborn and very difficult and very rebellious, and cause their parents a great deal of discomfort just by being mean and ornery and rebellious. And children should be corrected. Children should be taught as early as possible to obey their parents, to love their brothers and sisters, to settle down and not be so selfish, because little children are very selfish. And it's got to be corrected. He who, even if it hurts the parents more than it hurts them, he who oppresses the poor to increase his riches, and he who gives to the rich will surely come to poverty. If you're bribing a rich man to get his favor and he doesn't really need what you're giving him, then that's self-serving. On the other hand, the person who puts down the poor and does not show respect for them is also going to come to poverty. Incline your ear and hear the words of the wise. Apply your heart to my knowledge, God says. It is a pleasant thing if you keep them within you. Let them all be fixed upon your lips, so that your trust may be in the Lord. I have instructed you today, even you. Have I not written to you excellent things of counsels and knowledge, that I may make you know the certainty of the words of truth, that you may answer words of truth to those who sent to you? Very early in the book of Proverbs, we had the idea of the picture here of a father talking to his young son, and the son growing up and becoming an adult and leaving home. And this is kind of like an adult son coming home to visit his dad and talk about life and enjoy adult fellowship. I think that's what this is. And the father and the son can talk about the Lord and his role in their relationship and so on. Do not rob the poor because he is poor, nor oppress the afflicted in the gate. The Lord will plead their cause. Plunder the soul of those who plunder them. Don't mess around with people who are out of work or discouraged or defeated, because God is ready to defend them when you take advantage of their vulnerability. Make no friendship with an angry man, and with a furious man do not go, lest you learn his ways and set a snare for your soul. That means anger can be very contagious. Somebody else is angry and irritable and grouchy and can rub off on us, and we get angry, irritable, and grouchy. And if somebody is angry all the time, furious, then we have to be careful not to get into road rage or blow our top all the time or lose our cool, no matter how frustrated, because it's contagious. Other people pick that up. Do not be one of those who shakes hands in a pledge, one of those who is surety for debts. If you have nothing with which to pay, why should you take away your? Why should your bed be taken away from under you? Suppose you owe a very large debt, and the bill collector is coming around, and you don't have any money, so he takes your furniture and your car and your valuables. Well, the least that guy can do is leave you a bed to sleep on. In other words, when somebody's down and out, you don't take everything he has. You leave him with his clothes and a bed to sleep in, and a bunk, even though you have a right to take his furniture and his car, bill collector. Do not remove the ancient landmark which your fathers have set. Do you see a man who excels in his work? He will stand before kings. He will not stand before unknown men. The reference to landmarks goes back to Deuteronomy, and it has to do with property boundaries and rights. And when in land like Israel, everybody has a piece of land that's their livelihood and sustenance, and it's passed on down to them by their fathers, it's not a good idea to buy up that land and kick the owner out, even if it's in a time of need, because his life depends on farming that piece of land. So this is where we are not to subdivide and take over and assimilate farmers and orchards, which has been done here in Silicon Valley. But in ancient Israel, if you took a man's property, because he owed you a bill, had a bad year, you have made it impossible for him to farm the next year. And that's unsatisfactory. So that's what this, don't remove ancient landmarks. And then verse 29, if you see a man who's really great, a creative artisan, a rose grower, a craftsman, a painter, an artist, a photographer, who does really good work, like Dave Bang, for example, superb photography and superb painting, that man, quiet and private, and hardly anybody knows about his talent, is going to get noticed by high up in the, and rewarded. So in other words, can't be hidden, because it's beautiful and it's shows the creativity of God. When you sit down to eat with a ruler, consider carefully what is before you, and put a knife to your throat if you're a man given to appetite. In other words, restrain yourself if you're at a big banquet at the king's house. Eat delicately and gingerly, and don't make a hug. Even if you're hungry, don't eat everything all in one gulp off your plate and embarrass the king and all the other people there at the feast. Do not desire the king's delicacies. They're deceptive food. Kings often have hummingbird tongues and exotic vegetables and spices and meat, like Solomon did, and can spend thousands of dollars on a banquet and invite all kinds of snooty people and royalty. And if you're invited to such a banquet, then don't pay any attention to the exotic foods from tropical places. You might get sick, and it's just overkill. Do not overwork to be rich. Because of your understanding, cease. If you are a workaholic and a driven person to get ahead in the world, you're in trouble. God does not want us to be totally occupied with making money and paying the bills, because he is a lavish giver and a provider, and he wants to bless us, and it's not just a result of our work. And it doesn't matter how much you make per hour or what salary you get or anything like that. Ordinary craftsmen are greatly rewarded by God because they're good craftsmen, because they do good work, because they're loyal. And they may take home very little money. My car repair man down the street, Raul, works very, very hard and feeds a big family and has very high expenses. And I don't think he's rich, but he's sure a good guy. When you set your eyes on that which is not, riches certainly make themselves wings. They fly away like an eagle toward heaven. I don't know if that's where the bluegrass song, I'll Fly Away, comes from, but I know so many people who worked hard and saved up money and lost it all. I know so many people in this area pay a very large part of their income just for the mortgage, and the cost of living is extravagant. And it's really not worth it. If you can live elsewhere, Coalinga or whatever. And so your riches will fly away from you. You thought you were going to have a lot of money to retire on, that you could have a nest egg. And in today's uncertain world, that may not happen. You may die broke. Do not eat the bread of a miser, nor desire his delicacies. For as he thinks in his heart, so is he. Eat and drink, he says to you. His heart is not with you. The morsels you have eaten, you will vomit up and waste your pleasant words. So here is a man who's stingy and miserly and selfish and grudging, and he will give you a peanut butter sandwich grudgingly, not generously, even if you're very hungry. And he will have a very carefree attitude about that. Oh, I'm happy to give you a peanut butter sandwich. Here, have some wine. And he doesn't mean it. And so you know that he's hypocritical, that he's insincere. So the peanut butter sandwich will not even taste good. You'll vomit it up. A lot of humor. Do not speak in the hearing of a fool. He will despise the wisdom of your words. This is a great proverb, because if you give away your plan and your strategy to this idiot fool, he will just hate you and malign you. So don't tell him what you're doing in the first place. Be discreet and careful in what you say. Do not remove the ancient landmark, nor enter the fields of the fatherless. This would be a piece of property that's family owned, that parents have died, and the kids are struggling to make it productive. Those are the fatherless, and God protects the fatherless. Their Redeemer is mighty. He will plead their cause against you. How would you like to have Jesus going to court with you and pleading against you because you have taken advantage of somebody, stealing away their only source of income, exploiting? This happens all the way down through history, where the poor are exploited by the rich, where farmland is bought out by manor houses and rich barons, and the rich land baron lives in a great mansion with servants, and the former landowners become tenant farmers. This happened in England around World War II, but it happens everywhere. Apply your heart to instruction and your ears to words of knowledge. Do not withhold a correction from a child. If you beat him with a rod, he will not die. You shall beat him with a rod and deliver his soul from Sheol. That's pretty awesome. It's very important that you correct that stubborn, wayward kid, because he's going to get in big trouble, commit a major crime, go to the penitentiary, lose everything if he doesn't learn from you as a child about law and order and obeying authority and all that. So if you have to discipline him even severely, you won't really hurt him any. That's the idea. You will not hurt him eternally. He may yell and scream when you're spanking him or taking him out by the woodshed, but he'll thank you eventually. My son, if your heart is wise, my heart, Father says, will rejoice. Indeed, I myself, yes, my innermost being will rejoice when your lips speak right things. So here's a wayward kid, like the prodigal son, who comes home to his dad and asks his dad's forgiveness. And what joy that brings to the father, because his heart was broken when his son left with his inheritance and squandered it on loose living and ended up eating pig food, and then came home to his dad begging for forgiveness, and his father met him with joy. So that's the story of the prodigal son. Do not let your heart envy sinners, but in the fear of the Lord continue all day long. For surely there is a hereafter. There's a life after this. Your hope will not be cut off. Paul says, if for this life only we have hope, we are of all men most miserable. So if that's all we are looking for is reward in this life, we're miserable losers. Because paradise that lies in wait for us is way more glorious. And there's no sin and no death there. And so don't envy the upwardly mobile, the rich people in Silicon Valley with a lot of property. Don't envy them at all, because their time in the sun is very temporary, as we saw in the book of James. The rich man fades away in the midst of his pursuits. Hear, my son, and be wise, and guide your heart in the way. Do not mix with wine-bibbers, drunkards, or with gluttonous eaters of meat. The drunkard and the glutton will come to poverty, and drowsiness will clothe the man with rags. So you get, there are all kinds of people now that have got money, and they like to party and go out on the town and drink and go to entertainment places and live the fast life, la dolce vita, and hang around a little while, and they're going to end up in the gutter, end up broke, and you're going to end up surviving. Listen to your father who begot you. Do not despise your mother when she is old. Sometimes parents shape up when they get older and wiser, and life batters them down, and they finally begin to mellow out and listen to God. Buy the truth and do not sell it. Don't charge for the truth. I am very disgusted with the great number of internet ministries today that I think are like whorehouses, because they lure you with a few words and then they want you to buy their book, which is just there so they can make money. So that's just like prostitution, spiritual prostitution. The writers of the New Testament gave away the gospel free, often at the cost of their lives. They never charged a penny. They didn't even expect support, like Paul. Paul worked making tents so that the Christians at Corinth wouldn't be obligated to support him. So that's the right way for Christians to behave. When you go out street witnessing with Ray Comfort or whatever, you don't get paid for that. You shouldn't get paid for that. My son, give me your heart. Let your eyes observe my ways. The father says, the wise dad says, a harlot is a deep pit. A seductress is a narrow well. She also lies in wait as for a victim, and she increases the unfaithful among men. So this is a destroyer in the world who takes all the fine potential out of men and bastardizes it, prostitutes it, leads you into sex, drugs, rock and roll until you're a derelict and your masculine integrity is compromised and you're just whoring around. And that's the danger of this loose woman, this harlot, seductress. Who has woe? Who has sorrow? Who has contentions? Who has complaints? Who has redness of eyes? All these people. Are those who linger long at wine and who go in search of mixed wine. Do not look on wine when it is red, when it sparkles in the cup, when it swirls around smoothly. At the last, it bites like a serpent and stings like a viper. Your eyes will see strange things and your heart will utter perverse things. Yes, you will be like one who lies down in the middle of the sea. Or like one who lies at the top of a mast, saying, they have struck me, but I was not hurt. They have beaten me, but I did not feel it. When shall I wake? Oh, may I have another drink. This is about drunkards. This is about guys that go out and drink all night long and have hangovers in the morning and go off to work. And I've been in that class. A time in my life when I had to have a drink in the morning just to take away the hangover. And I thought hangovers were normal. I didn't think there was anything like a good night's sleep. And I sometimes would drink, go around bar to bar and drink until closing time, 2 a.m. And then go home and get a little bit of sleep. So this is not about the person who has a little wine with dinner or has a beer on a hot day. This is about the guy that parties around. And this is sort of imagery here of red bloodshot eyes and confusion and so on. Chapter 24. Do not be envious of evil men, nor desire to be with them, for their heart devises violence, and their lips talk of troublemaking. Through wisdom a house is built, by understanding it is established, by knowledge the rooms are filled with all precious and pleasant riches. Jesus talked about building a house on the sand versus building a house on solid rock, because the storms would come up and the wind would blow and the house built on sand would be destroyed. The house built on the solid rock, which is a life built on him, is permanent. That's the idea here. By wisdom. So by wisdom, again, that's this personification of God as a woman. This wholeness of life that is given to us in Jesus allows us to build a life of integrity and permanence. It endures right into heaven. A wise man is strong. Yes, a man of knowledge increases strength. For by wise counsel you will wage your own war, and in a multitude of counselors there is safety. This means you can get into arguments and you'll always win. It means that people can contend with you and you always have something transcendent to to say that contradicts the accusations against you. The second part here is that if you have a hard decision in life, it's a good idea to get several inputs from trustworthy friends. To get advice, you don't have to follow the advice, but at least you've considered the options. Wisdom is too lofty for a fool. He does not open his mouth at the gate. Wise people are a puzzle to ordinary fools and don't understand that wisdom is really a very powerful thing to have. On the other hand, you see, when you're in the gate, when you're in a place of leadership and authority, this fool isn't going to have anything to contribute to good government or good relationships at all, but you will. You'll have it. He who plots to do evil will be called a schemer. The devising of foolishness is sin, and the scoffer is an abomination to men. This would be the schemer, manipulating, contriving, self-centered guy that wants to get ahead at the expense of other people. People will pick that up and say, hey, that guy's no good. He's just scheming. He wants to get rich at your expense. And he's a skeptic. He doesn't want anything to do with God. If you faint in the day of adversity, your strength is small. We are all going to get tested. We're all going to have times of great trial and stress. And we got to ride through those times because they aren't going to last forever. The times of stress are seasonal and temporary, and they go away. And so tough it out because God's with you. Deliver those who are drawn toward death. Hold back those who are stumbling to the slaughter. When you see somebody in big trouble, going off the deep end or getting more than he's bargained for, go correct him, bring him back. He who restores a sinner from the error of his ways saves his soul from death and covers a multitude of sins, James says. Deliver those who are drawn toward death. Hold back those stumbling to the slaughter. If you say, surely we did not know this, does not he who weighs the hearts consider it? He who keeps your soul, does he, God, not know it? He will not render to you. Will he not render to each man according to his deeds? So above all of the conflicts in life stands God, who is paying careful attention to everything that's going on. He will reward good and punish evil in the long run, maybe not in the short term. My son, eat honey because it is good, and the honeycomb which is sweet to your taste. Enjoy life. Have a good time. Enjoy friends. Enjoy a good meal. Enjoy the richness of life. That's the meaning of honey here. The honeycomb is sweet to the taste. So shall the knowledge of wisdom be to our soul. If you found it, there is a prospect, and your hope will not be cut off. What a blessing to find a good wife or a good sister or a good loyal friend who really cares about you. What a blessing that is in life. Do not lie in wait, O wicked man, against the dwelling of the righteous. Do not plunder his resting place, for a righteous man may fall 7 times and rise again. The wicked will fall by calamity. So you can stumble and fall 12 times. Jesus will pick you up each time. But if you're deliberately set on evil, God will let you lie down and not get up. He'll let you stumble and suffer the consequences of your own bad choices. So that's a contrast. Do not rejoice when your enemy falls. Do not let your heart be glad when he stumbles, lest the Lord see it and it displease him and he turn away his wrath from him. So, I think when somebody's having a bad time, we tend to get on the bandwagon. If we don't like the guy, we chime in and add our insults to his injury, and that's not good. Because God wants to be just and fair in disciplining that guy. And don't envy the wicked because he's getting away with murder temporarily, because he won't get away in the long run. Do not fret because of evildoers, nor be envious of the wicked, for there will be no prospect for the evil man. The lamp of the wicked will be put out. Long term, the wicked are just going to disappear and not be around anywhere. And the righteous are going to survive, even though there aren't very many righteous. My son, fear the Lord and the King. Do not associate with those given to change, for their calamity will rise suddenly, and who knows the ruin these two can bring. So there's two things he talks about here. Rapid change and calamity. Rapid change would be impulsiveness, acting impulsively, making decisions rashly without thinking them through, without considering where they're taking you. That would be your bad choices, just because you don't know how to make good choices. And then there, the second category here, besides bad choices, would be calamity. When a disaster comes upon you, collapse of the stock market, a flood, a hurricane, and everybody's knocked out of commission, then watch how people crawl out of that disaster. These things also belong to the wise. It is not good to show partiality in judgment, to take sides without having all the facts. That's partiality. He who says to the wicked, you are righteous, him the people will curse, nations will abhor him. But those who rebuke the wicked will have delight, and a good blessing will come upon them. It's not a good idea to get on the bad wagon with a person who's bad in politics or in business or in government. That's not wise. Hang in with people that are honorable and have integrity and who love God. He who gives a right answer kisses the lips. That's a neat little proverb. Kissing the lips is intimacy, a blessing. It's lovers kiss on the lips. Today, Arabs kiss on the cheek, men and women, and men only. Anyway, prepare yourself outside work. Prepare your outside work. Make it fit for yourself in the field. Afterward, build your house. It's a good idea to have hobbies and part-time jobs when you're building a house, when you're developing things. Do not be a witness against your neighbor without cause. You suspect your neighbor as a drug dealer, but you can't prove it, so don't talk badmouth him around town. Don't run down his reputation. You don't have all the facts. Do not say to him, just as he has done to me, I will render to the man according to his work. I'll get even with you for dealing drugs in my neighborhood. That would be inappropriate. God will find him out. And in the meantime, you should show love to your neighbor and so on. I went by the field of a slothful man and by the vineyard of a man devoid of understanding. And there it was, all overgrown with thorns. Its surface was covered with nettles. Its stone wall was broken down. When I saw it, I considered it well. I looked on it and received instruction. We've all seen ruined property that has not been cultivated or farmed or pruned or trimmed. That's just, or trash all over that person's yard because they're too lazy to clean it up. Wait around a little while. Stone wall broken down, house in disrepair, weeds and trash all over the place.
Chicago.
Yeah. Well, so the searcher here learned from that. He said, I got to learn a lesson from that. A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. So your poverty will come like a prowler. You're what? Like an armed man. So look at that old derelict house down the street, which is unkempt because the owner's too lazy. Wait around a while and it's going to get foreclosed and the owner's going to go to the poorhouse and somebody's going to tear everything down and build a new house in its place because the owner is not willing to work and clean it up, not willing to have just ordinary habits of taking care of things. So that would be, good heavens, we've all met people like that. 22, I did three chapters. Is that enough?
It's up to you.
I'm at your service. Actually, there's a major change here. Let's do one more week in Proverbs. One or two. Is that okay?
Sure.
All right. Thank you so much, Father, for this time together in Proverbs today. There's so much here that's worth thinking about and pondering. So help us to learn and be wise and be men of integrity in the name of Jesus. 40 minutes.